Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, alongside Mr. Mark Ellis, who is happy, well-refreshed. I think all you've been doing is watching SportsCenter.
That's pretty much all I've been doing for the past life. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy, you could say. You're in your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You have a hot beverage.
And a cold beverage.
On your right. Then you have a cold beverage to your left. You got some Cheez-Its. I mean, this is your station.
I am literally trying to chill. Also, I need to like...
I feel like I'm on her NPR show right now.
No, I need to ease into being in the office because we haven't discussed this, but I was very much like Nat Turner when it came to like reporting back to the office. Like I was trying to lead a revolution. And so giving me beverages and snacks is kind of the only thing that keeps me
sane. Do you have a workspace here in
no,
the office?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I mean, it's okay though. They know I don't want to be here.
The key... to great productivity is understanding your employees' needs.
I mean, look, they know that a lot of my work is done outside of the building. I'm not even like coming against that. Like at first I was kind of like, well, I need a place. But then in the back of my mind, I was like, you don't want to be here anyway.
You come in here to take a break from work.
I mean,
I come into the office to relax.
Yeah. Like I coffee badge it up. Also, I have a great home office. Like if I had a crappy home office, I would be like, oh, I don't want to be.
It's a great setup.
Yeah.
I've experienced it. Yeah. I've actually seen you working because I've come over to your place and I'll just hang out with the dog because you're still like cranking away on an article for the last 10 minutes. And I'm like, I'll just make myself a drink.
And it's never 10 minutes, but the bar is stocked, which Grace, you are more than welcome to join me there. I'm glad you're joining us here. Of course, Heather Grace Hancock, actress, NCIS Los Angeles, SWAT, Criminal Minds. I'm glad you're taking a break from your very busy schedule as a working actor to come talk about a movie that's near and dear to my heart and apparently near and dear to yours, too.
So much so. So happy to be here. So good to see you both. And this film is just, it's just a delight. So I'm so happy to talk about it.
I'm very excited. We're getting spooky, ladies and gentlemen. It is the 1989 classic. If I told you how many times I watched the bootleg version that I copied off of Disney Channel of this movie, it would be embarrassing. If you know how many times kids that don't know VHS tapes, if you watch them too long, they will warp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did that to this movie. That's right. Teen Witch. It is 43% rotten on the tomato meter, but it has a 74% audience score because there is a God out there. There is a 35th anniversary for this movie coming up in April. This is one of those movies that, again, I have been like, we've got to cover it. We've got to cover it because I've had thoughts for so, so very long. Grace, I'm so glad you're here to join me because apparently you too have had thoughts for so very long.
Firstly, I was thrilled when you texted me about this. I had no idea anybody but myself and my sister knew this film even existed. I had no idea it had a theatrical release. I had no idea it was iconic outside of my household. So what a delight and what a treat. And rewatching it as an adult is it was something special.
It was very strange when I hit up Grace because I'm like, okay, who do I know that might have seen this movie Teen Witch, which I'm looking at and I'm like, I've never heard of this movie or seen this movie. maybe there was like, I heard Jacqueline talking about it in one of our meetings from years back where it's like, well, we got to, I mean, Teen Witch has got to be on the docket.
Yeah.
And I think the team was like, okay, yeah, we'll put it on there. We'll put it right after Encino
like,
Man
just give
for
her
March.
Her Cheez-Its. Yeah. She'll forget.
Just give her Cheez-Its and her beverages.
You
she's
know
fine.
Me so well. Thank you.
But then, you know, but then Grace immediately writes back. She's like, oh my God, my sister and I grew up. We quote this to each other in our secret language. And I'm like, I guess this is a thing.
Yeah.
And again, 35th anniversary in April. You know who saw this movie a couple months ago on the big screen at a real movie theater? Producer Brian.
Yeah.
Just, I don't even know if he knew we were doing it on the show. He just wanted
it?
To see a flick.
Did your wife make
just
you?
Just a line?
Yeah, the wife. Oh. He's nodding. The wife made him. Because this was
all coming together.
This was of a certain millennial girl's age movie. Like, it's sort of like our Hocus Pocus. Like, it was.
Totally.
It was that movie. So, Grace, if you will, can you tell the incredibly rewatchable, very beloved story of Teen Witch?
Oh, like the synopsis?
Give me a quick synopsis. Give me just high bar beats.
Oh, man. It's so good. Well, it starts when a man. No. So it's about this young girl who is about to turn 16. Her name is Louise Miller. And, is that her name? Or
yes, no, you had that perfectly right.
Okay, perfect.
Not a lot of
see, it's, like, it's in my body, and
anymore.
I didn't even know. You I know, you're I mean? It's like deeply in my DNA as a child.
Yes.
And she is in love with Brad, the quarterback, as we all were a little
stud.
Bit.
Stud.
And he, of course, hits her with his car, as one does. And by doing so, she pops a tire on her bike, so she has to go into this very spooky household and finds this psychic there who's just like, one of my favorite parts of the whole film.
Yes.
And she's like, well, no, I just need to use your phone. And she's like, let me read your palm. And then she's like, oh, you're going to be a witch in like a week. And she's like, super cool. Gotta go. So she goes back to school. And then she starts to notice that things that she's wishing are coming true. She's like, I just wish that Brad would look at me. And then he turns and he goes.
Yeah, he does.
And she's like, well, this is spooky. So it builds and builds and builds. And then, of course, we learn the beautiful lesson that, you know, you have to be careful what you wish for. Sometimes the things that we think we want aren't what we really want. And so she throws her necklace away.
Yeah, she gets these powers and does exactly what a teenage girl would do is say, I want to be the most popular girl in school.
Yeah.
And then she is.
Fair.
And then by
which
the end.
Which means she just does her hair differently.
Basically.
Yeah.
Very, she's all that before she's all that.
Totally.
Hey, it's a big jump when you get to ride in the convertible with the cool kids to school every day and you get to ditch your nerdy friend who, you know, we feel bad
Polly,
for.
Polly, the real hero of this story.
We're
going to
get there. But anyway,
by
the end, she realizes she doesn't need her powers. She's powerful and she's enough without them. One of the best soundtracks to ever grace the 80s. Let me just tell you, thank you, Grace, for that incredible synopsis.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Witch. Yeah. Oh, I love this movie. It's interesting to see, too, because it was a sort of like secret movie. It came out, out for like 2 weeks, made like no money, but then it became this replayable movie that came on Disney Channel, TNT. It was just always kind of on back when they would do that with movies like Hocus Pocus, like Return to Oz, like The Worst Witch.
Oh, Return
to Oz. All those movies sort of permeated our teendom. And I think Tim Ryan is going to sort of recap. That is the reason why this movie has become one of these like cult classic, beloved, but not critically well-received film. So let's hear it for 2 minutes with Tim. 2 minutes
with Tim. Teen Witch had what could politely be called a troubled production history. It was also released on the same day as Pet Sematary and Field of Dreams. And with the likes of Major League, Say Anything, Rain Man, Twins, and Heathers still in theaters, it was a serious box office dud. Critics were largely unimpressed as well, calling Teen Witch an uneven mix of fantasy, musical, and after-school special. So why does Teen Witch have such an enthusiastic cult following? Because it was on cable all the time in the early 1990s, where its strangeness and campiness felt more at home than on the big screen. Teen Witch is rotten at 43% on the tomato meter with 21 reviews, and it has a 75% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Chris Hicks of Salt Lake City's Deseret News wrote, "It's surprisingly shoddy, with a very bland script and indifferent direction, only adequate performances from most of the cast, and very choppy editing that cuts either too quickly or too slowly from scene to scene." However, in a fresh review, Barbara Vancheri of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette wrote, "The movie is aimed at preteens and teens who long for popularity and dates with the school quarterback. This, in fact, would be the perfect movie for a slumber party of 11-year-olds." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "While drenched in upbeat messages and heart, The wonders of high school, love, and magic often don't meld well enough for this inoffensive teen witch. So that's Teen Witch. Let's get you back to Jacqueline and Mark, two people who have the power to make anything you want happen. Back to you, folks.
The magic was in us the whole time.
It really was. Okay, so Mark, you watched this last night?
I did. Enjoyed it for the first time in my life.
And I'm glad you enjoyed it, too, because this is like, this is hitting right up in the teen girl's wheelhouse, and I love that you felt at home with it.
It's wild to think about the history of it, too, because it started out as like they wanted to make a spinoff to Teen Wolf. Mm-hmm. And then you had, Teen Wolf is 42% on the tomato meter. Teen Wolf 2 with Jason Bateman's like 8%.
Yeah.
And then this one rebounded. This is actually higher than Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
So, and I don't consider the MTV ones because I didn't, I mean, again, I know that they're around. I know they're hugely popular for a different generation. It ain't going to get me. Teen Witch, though, like you're watching it, and it was almost like they made an after school special, but they're like, you know what? Let's let the kids direct and edit and let's just let them do everything. Here's the equipment, kids. Good luck with what you come up with. And they came up with a great metaphor as to why you shouldn't do drugs.
Oh, my gosh.
You know?
So you think Rotten Tomatoes is right?
I think from a movie perspective, yeah, I think Rotten Tomatoes is right. Like, I do see a lot of redeeming value to it. And there is a real heart to it. But I don't know that it's a fresh movie.
Philistine. Grace, where are you at? Is Rotten Tomatoes right or wrong?
I mean, I have to say, even though, because I was a 90s kid, so that's how we found it. I always thought it was a Disney Channel original movie because it was on all the time. We were like, yes.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, this movie is unhinged.
Yeah.
This movie is out of control. It is chaos. It makes no sense. It's so cringe. And it is, I can't think of anything because I feel like we say this a lot, but I don't know that I've ever meant this. It's so bad that it's good.
Yes.
So it's like Rotten Tomatoes is absolutely right. But it is like a very sort of like time capsule-esque thing. Like when certain lines, I was like, oh my God, yeah. It's like me and my sister have all these inside jokes. We don't even know what the hell they're from at this point. And I was like, it's from Teen Witch. So it's so near and dear to my heart, but it's real bad.
I think unhinged is a great way to describe this movie because I'll give this a movie like this fresh if I feel like I could trust it to go with me to Las Vegas, you know?
Mm.
But you can't trust Teen Witch in Las Vegas with its own devices because it's just going to go nuts in all these different ways. So I really do appreciate a lot of it, but I can't trust you. I need you to be supervised at all times, Teen Witch.
No, listen, I can admit that, especially when it comes to some of the acting in this, we're going, like, there were some things about this production that did not necessarily gel. And I will be the firm one to say that it's not going to be like what I was talking about with, like, Jupiter Descending a few weeks ago, where I'm like, in my heart, this is certified fresh. No, it's not that. Because there's not that level of filmmaking behind it. But what I will say is the movie is so watchable. It's so iconic. There's so many iconic moments for it that I would be willing easily to put this in the, like, high 60s range. And this has the exact same score as that film that I often cite, which is Constantine. But this one is actually, in my opinion, I'm like, no, if you put this higher than Constantine, I would actually kind of agree. I would agree for this one reason, for how iconic it is. There's great moments of Constantine, and I love and live for that movie. The filmmaking, I think, is much more at a higher level. But there are, like, people have made entire personalities around that scene, top that. Like, people recreate the iconic, you know, never gonna be the same again, like, most popular girl sequence. I like boys, girl. Bars.
Dude, I like boys is the most insane 5 minutes that I've ever seen in any film.
Absolutely.
Ever.
But the choreography by a West Side Story choreographer, I might add, amazing. Yeah. Like, there's, like, a mini musical in this. This is one of the best musicals you've ever seen. There's a mini sex comedy in this. It's just one of the greatest sex comedies that we didn't get to witness because they toned it down a bit.
Right.
And there's also this great coming-of-age story. And it's, unfortunately, the schizophrenic aspect of the production is the only reason why it is the way that it is. But this all could have been stitched so much better. And I say this as a heavy romance reader. If they would have just let the sex that was clearly in the undertones of this movie have its breathing room. But we'll get there when we dive deeper into movie talk. So, Brian, cue the music. So this was, like I said, a Disney Channel movie. It was also, like, a Showtime Encore. Remember Encore, which is now just Stars? But, like, remember the Encore channel?
Oh, right,
yeah.
Right.
This was all over Encore, and I lived for it. The outfit that Louise wears when she's trying to be cute before she becomes the most popular girl in school, I tried to recreate that. Because, like, I didn't understand that
the
that
one
was
her
a
mom picks out for?
No, the other one. Like, the one that she, like, when she goes on the date with the goofy cousin.
Oh, right, right.
Uh-huh.
The nerd?
Yes. And she's
the
like...
The very handsy nerd? Is
the very handsy nerd, I might add.
Who's still in some alternate dimension, for all we know.
Lock that guy up. My God.
I mean...
He had the classic 80s nerd laugh, though.
He really did, dude. Also, if they did his hair differently and, like, styled him better, that dude is actually hot. Like, no, that dude is not unattractive.
Oh, totally. And also,
like,
all these looks are totally doable today. Yes. I was like, we can make it work.
But that...
I mean, he's a sexual predator, but other than that...
Yeah, and he is a 35-year-old man also,
yes,
so that was
absolutely
problematic.
No, he would have been...
He's like 40.
He is.
Oh, my God. No, he looked... They all... I mean, I feel like even like...
Brad especially.
This is the time when actors were like, I'm 35. I'm 16. And it was we were all just okay
Dan
with
Gauthier
it.
Dan Gauthier plays Brad, who I immediately recognized as like the bad boyfriend in Son-in-Law.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is years
right,
later.
Yeah.
I think he was 25 during the... Yeah. he made this movie.
And then Robin Lively was closer. She was like 18 or 19. So she was actually closer to her age. Obviously, the young actor that played her brother was actually... her age. So that young actor is younger than what he actually is.
He was a good snot-nosed kid brother.
He was such a good snot-nosed little brother. I will say Dan, very similarly to the guy from Pretty in Pink, was kind of just plucked out of obscurity for being like a very jock type character.
He's hunky.
Oh man, that scene of them. Listen, before we get into this, I just want to do a recreation of some of the greatest scenes. There is a soft jazz saxophone sex scene in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I'm so glad they didn't cut that out because he looks at her. And like, when I first watched it, I didn't realize that this was a sex scene. But like now, no, I'm like, that was a sex scene.
it's like the weird extreme close up on like her shoes.
I know.
Where she like takes off her shoes and put them on a windowsill. And we're like, why? What's happening? And he's doing this like coquettish thing up the stairs, like, and then he like runs and poses and you're just like, what is happening? And then they make out.
It feels like
so
a Celine Dion video. Like it feels like old 80s like music video movie. Like did you feel the sexiness of that moment?
This movie telegraphed exactly the year that it came out.
No!
And really right from you get to the sex scene and that's wonderful, but even the opening credits of this movie have like that rockin' saxophone that's like post St. Elmo's Fire, pre Nirvana. And so you know right like what the shoebox to put this movie in. And I was disappointed like y'all that we didn't just get like, because originally this movie was going to be raunchy. It was going to be like rated R, like a Porky's kind of thing. And if you go back and watch the first Teen Wolf, there's a lot more raunch than I remember because we had taped the edited for TV version.
Yeah.
When you watch the actual one, and you get to see Styles' shirt, like what he's actually wearing to school, which is a shirt that says, what are you looking at, nose?
Yeah.
And then you have, like, there's a full-on sex scene where the wolf howls in Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, you know, equality being what it is in this day and age, maybe not 1989. Give her her full-on sex. Give her her howl moment.
There was something about Teen Wolf that wasn't talked about, which was that he was a horny teenager, wolfy sort of dude that got to, like, basically... when boys will be boys, that idea, like, because when he turned into the wolf, he also became a bit of a jerk. There's something to be said for in Teen Witch, they were trying to say when she became the witch, she became a vamp. She became this, like, alluring sex symbol. And all of that was in that hair, because they made that hair.
Absolutely.
So, so big. Also, the teacher.
Oh. Mr. Weaver?
Mr. Weaver.
Oh,
and
I hate
comedy
him.
Legend Shelley Berman.
Shelley, I was just saying,
he's
he is
the true
like,
villain of this.
True villain, also giving like Alan Rickman level performance. Like he was not uncommitted. Like he knew what he was in this movie, but he committed to every second. Like that's a great physical comedy performance.
Totally.
It's so believable because I literally was like, as a TB, like, this is voodoo. This is exactly what this is. I didn't in 1 minute think, oh, I wonder how the actor is kind of pulling off this.
He's in the car wash. It's so good. And the guy's like, it's free today. I don't know, man. Like, I just work here.
There's a lot of comedy DNA in this movie because you also have Dick Sargent from Bewitched as the dad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go into the horror element with Zelda Rubinstein from Poltergeist, obviously, as the medium in Poltergeist and pretty much playing the same role here. And I just, like, it reminded me of The Craft in the way that there's just like this weird house or in The Craft, there's this weird store that nobody ever went to until they did. And they're like, oh, this has been in town the whole time.
Yeah.
Like nobody knew Zelda Rubinstein was just like hanging out in town.
And I love how they like, they make her like a little bit of a broke down witch. Like her, like also everyone is so horny in this movie. Like the teacher, The first thing Louise does, like the, her favorite teacher, is she gets her a Latin lover and she's like, I don't even know what happened. And then like they go off and like bang. And then also Zelda Rubinstein making her Kermit the Frog
hotness. It's one of my favorite scenes.
Sorry,
of
let's
the
set,
whole.
Set the scene up.
How could one even? So she's doing a spell on a frog, which I adore frogs. Mm-hmm. Just fun fact.
Yeah, they're fun.
She turns him into a very hunky, very young blonde man. Yes. More power to her. And then she literally, like, I can only imagine reading your lines as an actor and being like, oh, that scene's today. And she's literally like, tell me, like, talk to me, tell me dulcet tones or whatever. And the actor mouths the word ribbit. While yeah. they ADR an actual frog. Ribbiting, yeah. I believe, is the verb. So it's pretty iconic.
But she absolutely—
Careful what you wish for.
And she loved it.
She absolutely banged that frog.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
She just, like, stayed
and
quiet.
He loved it.
Probably
like,
licked his back and got high.
You know, like—
The psychedelic elements of licking a frog. Don't try it at home, kids.
But she literally, like, it's like, we don't need to talk.
Yeah, and then she was like, you know what, on second thought,
She absolutely banged that frog.
But it's funny because, like, she's the agent of chaos, sort of like the shopkeeper in The Craft is,
yes.
where it's like, they know the power that, and she can see the talent in witchcraft that Blake Lively's 16-year-old her sister, Robin Lively, who I didn't know they were related. Yeah.
I know. I didn't know that until recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's looking at Robin Lively. She's like, all right, this kid's clearly got game. Mm. I'm just going to stir this pot. Same way that the Craft Witch is like, okay, here's all the stuff. Yeah. I just want to watch y'all do this. Like, this is, I'm just so bored with my life as a spookstress that I want to watch everybody else in town just summon all this crap and just go nuts.
Well, let's be real. She's old because she talks about the fact that Louise is reincarnated, basically. Like, she was another witch who was reincarnated. I also think that, like, this was also probably the very practical magic side of it. She probably died because she was in bed with the wrong man's husband. There's a very clear, you are a seductress vamp sort of, like, witch storyline in here that obviously got very sort of muted. There's incredible and iconic moments. Even outside of, like, we'll get to top that, but, like, we already talked about I Like Boys, but the soundtrack. I really want to, like, make sure. They made a Teen Witch musical, and it was, like, an off-Broadway thing that, like, has been, like, produced and put around there. This is not, like, you know, Carrie the musical. This was actually a musical that people liked.
Yeah, yeah.
And Never Gonna Be the Same Again. That song where she goes, because the scene, it's literally my favorite scene, where she goes to her, like, icon, like, her version of Beyonce's concert, and the girl gives her her, like, touring jacket, which I'm like, when that spell wears off, how pissed is that woman going to be? Like, I gave it to a teenager who just, like, magically got her name on the list. Like, again, the powers that she's able to wield, I'm like, and you want to go there? Like, get me into, like, backstage at the Grammys. Like, girl, come on. Put me on every guest list I've ever been denied in my entire life. I want to go to the Chateau Marmont party with Jay-Z and Beyonce. Anyway, whole point being, she gets that piece of clothing and then she goes and does, like, her, like, twisty thingy, singing the song, and then she becomes the most popular girl in school. And that's the other most iconic moment. I'm gonna be the most popular. Like, bop! Bop.
And this is, it feels like the movie that taught girls how to choreograph singing in the locker room, which is what all of us guys know you're doing the whole time. Like, this was an accurate portrayal of how women act during gym class.
Did you like the music?
It was just...
Just stop there.
So
just stop there.
Because the movie doesn't tell you it's going to be that when it starts out, you know?
Yeah, I don't think, like, the movie knew.
Weird jazzercise opening. That's clearly like a witch putting a spell on somebody. And then you just have, like, normal brother-sister stuff. And then we get to school and we kind of realize the haves and the have-nots. But then you just, like, cut to this and you're like, oh, we're doing this. Okay.
Yeah.
It did separate itself from Teen Wolf. It did say, hey, we're not the same movie, because Teen Wolf had some musical sequences. This is a musical.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
I also love that the movie starts with a music sex scene. Like, yeah. She's in a wet dream. That's, again, like, just... somebody needs to remake this and lean into that. But I wonder if, like, the Gen Z kids would, you know what I mean? Like,
I really think you could. I think that you'd need to find the right tone of, like, winking and nodding. But yeah. I think the Teen Witch has, like, I think as a property does have potential.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why the musical maybe did better than, like, the film a little bit before we got, like, its, like, second wave of all of, like, the millennial women being like, mm-hmm. But it's, like, it didn't know, which is... partly why it works. It didn't know. It wasn't intentional or self-aware about the campiness. It was kind of like, are you a musical? We're not really sure. Like, are you like a sex comedy? Kinda. Like, yeah. is this like The Craft?
We just
like
want to be well-liked.
A little bit.
But look, the musical elements, the teenage vamp elements, and the everyone in this movie are so horny. All of the things that people love the most about it. Like,
absolutely.
Like, besides the look of it, like, I feel like, let's look at where the home runs were here as opposed to, like, the not home runs. And I think if they would have had, which they did, a pretty high-level comedy and theater background, if they would have just leaned more into that, because the musical performances that were done by outside voices, great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why you don't see Louise singing. There's a reason why you can tell that there's a dub.
Yeah,
woman that plays her idol. Like, everybody is singing along. And the few times where people actually, like, the rap scene.
Oh, Rhett.
Can we talk about the three white guys in high school who are the rappers?
The dance in front of that car just
they
on
were
a
so
sunny
into it.
Afternoon. And they're not even, like, facing each other. It is, what? I want to know everything. I want a whole mini series about these three white dudes.
There's a great video about this. So the actor that plays Rhett talked about how when they were getting ready to film it, he was like, I don't know, man. What? Like, and the gay, like, music guy was like, yes, no, you're going to rap. And, like, he's, like, doing the things to him. And he's just like.
And Rhett.
And he's like, okay, you're a West Side Story choreographer. And, like, that guy had a dance background. So, yeah. Like, a lot of the folks had dance backgrounds. They didn't have singing's background. But he literally thought, he's like, this is going to be a career killer. And he does conventions now for it. So set the scene on top of that, because it is another one of these great and iconic moments from this movie where Louise is first using her powers. And don't forget the floppy hat.
Well, we can't, because it is the star of the whole scene, yeah. You know, second only to Rhett.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful sunny afternoon. We have Polly and Louise biking around, just like talking about boys, floppy hats. And she's like, I just, you know, like, I think the Rhett's like kind of cute. And she's like, whatever. And then magically, just three white men, as they do, dancing sort of diagonal in the street, but not in the street. Yeah. A little bit dangerous, yep. You know.
B-boy culture at its finest.
Yeah. And they're doing like a fun, you know, one guy's looking over here, one guy's, and they're dancing and rapping with a boombox, I guess, to each other, like a performance just amongst themselves.
All white guys do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just the boy looking for two other white guys to start my rap group with.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thought
and we love that for you. And so they pull up and Polly's like, oh man, I wish I was that cool. And so Louise is like, hold on.
She says it with such longing. She's like, I wish I was hip. And she was earnest with that.
She was so genuine.
Do you know what cool is, Polly?
But for that, keep going.
Oh, but
it was.
And Louise is like, hold on, girl, I got you. And she's like, and goes to her thought. And then all of a sudden the boombox is like, and then Polly just lit up by the fire of God. Just
who would ever really want to go and talk
forward with this, like,
such a waste of pretty face of hanging in, you know, a space. I really wish you would. I'm not going to do it.
Oh my God. I literally, it's incredible. And she walks up and then they do this cool, like, this thing where he's here and then, the thing. And then she leaves and then she's like, top that, and gives one more of these and then leaves. And I didn't know that I, as a person, could have chills from secondhand embarrassment. And that goes for the parodies as well.
Yeah.
Like, other people who have made fun of this, I'm literally like, I want to die. This is the worst thing that will ever happen to me. It is that bad. It is unreal.
And the irony of this is weird in the sense that the directors and the writers were actually tapping into something, because I've seen enough white boy rappers of our generation who were clearly of that time frame. Maybe they weren't teenagers being that dumb. Like, the teenagers who were around for that portion of rap realized this is not maybe us. But the little kids... the little kids did not know, because those little kids grew up to be Jack Harlow. Like, those little kids grew up to be...
I saw a lot of Marky Mark.
You know what I mean?
Inspiration.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's
in those high school hallways.
So I don't think it is as far off from, like, what a lot of suburban white kids were doing at that time. It just wasn't as cheesy to be watching it when you were living it.
No, that's it almost like it. This movie, if it was bigger, it would have completely warped what the actual sense of cool is for years and years afterwards. Because there are a legion of dudes who are like, oh, like they think that that's cool, but they haven't seen it play out. Mm-hmm. And then they watch this movie. They're like, oh, look at how cool. OK, it is cool. We just got like notarized, rubber stamped. Boom. I am cool for doing this.
Yes. And it was the Italian guys that were attached to it. I was trying to remember Lambros DeMonte. Those two guys were the two ones that were like adamant about the top that scene, because they're like, this needs to be a hipper movie. We can't have it feeling like it doesn't have enough edge to it. You know, we're going to take out the sex, but we're going to bring the edge in. What's edgy? Rap music. So they added top that as a way to do that. And the main reason they also did it is the actress that played Polly, they felt she could pull off rapping more so than the other guys.
And boy, did she.
And if you actually look at the performances, you see what they mean.
I want to know what people think when they look at me and they're like, I don't know, I just feel like Grace could maybe do, you know, blank. And it's like, we just think that Polly could rap, you know? Like, what a weird thought to have, and then to actually do it, which I guess is a good thing that they did, because it ends up being the most iconic scene of all time. It is probably a big reason why this is really... withstood the test of time, because it's so horrifying and wonderful at the same time.
But everybody goes for it in this movie. Like, you're not going to get the Oscar-winning performances in Teen Witch, but there's commitment.
It wasn't an award, darling.
Unfortunately, it was not.
Unfortunately, it was not.
It did qualify, I guess, because it was released in theaters.
Yes.
But, like, when we were talking about how it didn't do well at the box office, there's not doing well.
Yeah.
And then this budget was $2.5 million. Its opening weekend, it made $3,000.
Yeah.
$3,000.
Like, that's not even popcorn. Like, the math isn't mathing.
Right.
I spent more on a semester of college than this movie made at the box office total. Like, like less than 30 grand.
And
less
now you have folks like producer Brian paying $20 for a ticket to see it. You just tripled the box office.
Well,
this
is, they've talked about this very similarly to The Room. Because of how much they licensed it, this movie made back its money eventually. Like, it's like they put in $2.5 million, but by the time it became, because I think they eventually did sell it to Disney. Like, originally it was just licensed
like
for
the
a
cable,
while. But like,
darling,
I want to say eventually, after it became such a hit,
Disney's like, we're tired of borrowing you.
Yeah.
We need this picture.
Well, because they saw the viewership for it. They knew that kids, because it was also the thing at that time, Disney was much more about their like half hour TV shows and stuff like that. And they had their movies. But it was movies that kids would stay watching if they came into it in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to have these movies that, like, no matter where people jumped into it, they would stay in. And they found that the musical numbers of it really kind of kept people going, and Top That and some of these other ones later on in the story are the things that got it. Again, I can't talk enough about this, but I do have to talk about, again, another one, the finale.
Oh.
Very similarly to Pretty in Pink, and this is why I love calling this the coming of age. I don't know what costume designers were doing in the 80s, but whenever it gets to the end of the 80s and they have to put the girl that we've been following in a banger outfit, the miss of what that outfit is so iconic. It becomes, because like, could her shoulder pads been any higher?
Scientifically, no.
You know, like, it's like the Pretty in Pink dress. It's like, girl, is this it?
She did look like she was like suiting up.
You
like, your one football helmet show. Like, I get that you're in love with a quarterback. Are you trying to play
He'll
on the team?
This.
Is that
what you... Like, I want to do a ranking of, like, 80s finale boss-level girl outfits, and this has got to be, like, just F-tier. Like, along with the Pretty in Pink outfit. You know, there's so many of them. I think the one that's... Even the 16 candles outfit is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And
the glitter on the legs, which they always do like the creepy slow pan, and you're like, well,
it was
she's
the
15.
Creepy slow
we're still
pan.
Here.
Yeah,
still going.
It's definitely the
but
creepy
there's
slow
glitter.
Pan.
There's so much hairspray.
The tough chick in Nightmare on Elm Street 3,
yeah.
who like lives out her fantasy to fight Freddy, and she's got like fingers that become needles. But she's wearing this like punk rock outfit.
Oh my god!
Like
iconic.
Joan Jett on steroids.
This is definitely. We need to do an iceberg episode on this, where we just go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And I honestly feel like it's something that we can do. I can't.
But like the biggest thing with this movie is not the fault of the cast for me. Mm. That's why.
No.
You know, everybody works very hard in every movie, but like what Tim said, the editing is so bad in this movie, and the director. It's just like the shots they set up, like the scene where Brad is driving with his current girlfriend and they're like kind of making out. And so he doesn't see the road and he hits Louise when she's riding a bike. It's like, it's one of the worst sequences
yeah.
I've ever seen. I mean, it's in no way did he make any contact.
No.
And she just like, like you think she's going to go like flying off the road into a ravine.
No.
She just casually pulls over to the side. And
casual.
Just, they didn't even need a Band-Aid. I mean, what are we doing here?
I mean, I don't think they had the stunts budget for that.
No.
They were like, if we take our lead actress out, we're down for like 8 weeks. Also, let's give it up for Robin Lively for, you know, starring in this movie, because I just imagine the demands that they were having to make on her to stay believable, which she totally does throughout this movie. I don't feel a false note for her as Louise, but the insanity around her. Like, she's the straight man, technically, even though she's the witch.
She does as good of a job grounding the action as anybody could have. And originally they went after Debbie Gibson to play that role.
Yes.
And who was the huge teen pop star at the time. So you wonder how the movie would it be even more of like a madcap campy musical if Debbie Gibson had been in it?
I mean, I think
because
that
Debbie's
I think
not
so,
sitting
yeah.
on the sideline. When all those other cute girls are singing in the locker room, Debbie ain't sitting on the sideline for that.
I think for what's interesting with this movie is you can tell that for so many of the scenes, like the reason why they had the extra actress, like the singer lady, is because those were originally going to be songs that were going to be given to the main character.
Mm. Yeah,
they then
you could
eventually,
kind of feel that they were,
you know,
like,
what I mean.
Eh.
And if you watch the Teen Witch musical, which did become a thing, all those songs are hers. You know, Never Gonna Be the Same Again is her song, and you know, I Want to Be the Most Popular Girl is her song. It's not somebody else's song that she's listening to on the radio. Again, look, hey, I'll give them for their clever sort of way of turning into this. I'm literally just imagining the Teen Witch remake that I want to make. And I
know, right?
I'm upset, you know, that we never got it. And I'm sad now because it would have been the sex musical comedy for the ages.
Has there been any Teen Witch like references in the Teen Wolf and in the MTV Teen Wolf, like in the show or the TV movie that they made based on it? Like, I wonder if Teen Witch, because it is such a weird cult classic that permeates
like
the culture.
Like some deep cut.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Riverdale is what this show could have been and did do that. And it did have musical episodes and it did have sort of like a musical bent towards the end of it. But no, the Teen Wolf show is actually, if the Teen Wolf show was made by A24 and MTV, like that's what it was supposed to be like. It's meant to be like a real scary horror movie, but also with teenagers. So very Cabin in the Woods, very sort of like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like that.
I wonder if we could, like, could you do Teen Witch today? Because like we I think we know Sabrina so well as like the teenage witch. And I like that Netflix reboot that they did a couple of years ago. So I don't know, like, would we have the appetite for another Teen Witch? Like something in this lore? Or do you just think that it stands best as a time capsule of 1989 and how we just threw movies together?
I think it's best as a time capsule because it could either go one of two ways. I either want like the gritty Fincher version, but then I'm like, oh, wait, we already have the craft. We're good. Or you got to really lean into the camp. And I think we're kind of like good on that front. I think it's like we're good. But it's also because it's so unintentional with Teen Witch. That's what makes it so great. And it's like it would be a very, I mean, there's definitely certainly very talented people who could pull it off, meaning creators and producers. But I think it's like the fine line of it being so that they were just like, we don't know. We're just going to throw it on the wall. That's what makes it so great. So it's like if you were leaning into it, I think it would kind of take away what makes it so iconic because it's just so ridiculous.
I think if Jennifer's Body could be a musical, I think that's where I'm leaning to where this kind of thing goes.
Ooh, like, I don't hate that at all.
I'm like, and there's a Polish horror movie called The Lure, which is actually out on Criterion Collection. I have the copy of it, which is about mermaids, but the real story of mermaids, which were kind of built terrifying. Off on sirens and they kill people. And these are mermaids who leave the ocean because they want to join a rock band. And the way that they sort of do that is by eating men. And and that is
a cause
part
we could all
of how
get behind.
They, and it's very like, I mean, I'm like, I've seen elements of this movie elsewhere. I think there's a movie in it. There's at least a romance novel in it.
Hey, you five fishy broads, you really got something. I want to put you on my record label.
We do need the Italian producer being like, more hip hop. Yeah.
You can totally see like the elements of West Side Story too, like in the choreography.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would. It would be such a shame though if you did try to do a Teen Witch and you just made it straight like scary.
Yeah.
Or like whatever, because there is so much fun to be had in this world too with like Winx. Like you can Mean Girls as well.
And then
they turned Mean Girls into a musical.
They did.
So we already have the music. For Teen Witch. Like, we already got the tracks.
I do feel that. Like, I don't want to be, like, weird about it in this one sense, but I'm like, no, I feel like this is definitely something that could happen, and so, like, let's make
it
happen.
Yeah, I think they were for a hot minute. I think Ashley Tisdale, when she was, like, you know, a Disney darling, they were going to do a remake with her, but it kind of fizzled out.
Yeah.
Which I'm actually kind of...
Of Teen Witch? Or
yeah.
Oh, really?
Which I'm actually kind of happy about, because I don't know that that would have been
what I wanted,
which is what's important.
No. it's absolutely
But
what's
there's
important.
Definitely a world, yeah. Like, if they did, we're watching. We're going.
And maybe Blake Lively could be, like, a teenager.
Yeah. Any other favorite moment?
Just like Brad was 25 years old.
He was a quarterback. Hey, she could still play it. I saw her in that Chiefs box. She could do it. Any final moments that stand out to you, Mark, before we get out of here that you're like, I feel like I hit all of my faves and we talked about did we even talk about the final battle? We didn't. We got distracted by the awesome.
I mean, it's the dance. It's when they touch hands.
Girl.
The scream that left my mouth. Just it's pristine.
For those who can't see it, but like. When they do this thing, what they did in 80s dances, where you like, you go shoulder to shoulder and you go around each other in circles. Like, this is like literally Darcy and Pride and Prejudice.
Totally. Yeah. And like, everybody knows the dance and they're all like twirling, staring at each other's eyes.
And that's not her. And I knew where this was going. And I'm a dummy when it comes to predicting movies, but I've seen Teen Wolf so many times that I'm like, oh, okay. She no longer needs to use the spell. Brad's in love with her. By the end of the movie. Just like Scott Howard didn't have to turn into the wolf. He was already a good basketball player. Now, albeit it would have been a lot easier victory if he had stayed the wolf.
Yeah. You know,
probably would have gone to pro if he stayed the wolf, but he didn't. So no D1 scholarship for you. But he ends up falling in love with the real her. And isn't that really what the film's about?
I feel like there's some plot holes there because I'm like, well, but you did use the magic to get him.
The magic really helped. Magic really helped.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I've literally
never apologized for
them.
Singing Teen
could
Witch
do
to me.
All of
do
them.
They last? Does this couple last?
No couple.
No, certainly
because
not.
Because we got college coming up.
Statistically, 90% of relationships that begin before the age of 30 end.
So. Is that true? Before the age of 30?
Yeah.
90%?
90% of relationships that begin before the age of 30 eventually end.
They are the
early curve of divorces. Like, you know those
Grace
people?
Yeah,
the
second.
Yeah, like the first wave of divorces are people that got married under the age of 30.
You know what? I say good for you, kids.
But what if they're not married? What if they're just coupling?
Same.
Okay.
Okay. Like the idea of staying with somebody, there's a great, I can't believe I'm doing this because there's a great Netflix special by Daniel Slosh called Jigsaw, where he basically says that he had just gotten out of a very toxic relationship. And if you are in any kind of a wobbly relationship, I do not advise you watch this because he says it's responsible for over
10,000
breakups. And hundreds of divorces, because he basically puts the case to a lot of people. You don't know what it's like to be alone, and you're so petrified of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to admit how horrible the person sitting next to you right now in this show is.
I'm living for it.
But he also says he's responsible for like 1,000 engagements and 1,000 other people realizing, oh, no, this is my person. And the one thing I will remember from that was when he said is like, do not get married young. You do not know yourself. Your brain's not finished developing until 27. If you're on the neuro spectrum, it's like 32.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's hence why I will never legally marry
wait
anybody.
Until you're an older lady and you start casting spells on toads and frogs and when you really know what you want out of life.
I mean, seriously.
Those were some of my favorite scenes in the movie. I didn't realize that the term lookbook went all the way back to the 1600s.
Yes.
A lookbook. It's she like actually the yearbook has... from 1600s.
I'm not saying that there was a lookbook, but the idea of like who's who, like there used to be marriage prospect books where they would put women in their like cattle that you could buy at the marriage
market.
Did they
call it a lookbook?
I don't know if they called it a lookbook, but it was the cattle.
I mean, they might have called it a lookbook. I don't know. I remember my parents were talking about having a lookbook in college. I'm like, how old is that? So maybe it does go back to the Salem witch trial days.
Maybe it does. I think at a time when, before the internet, the people were always looking for a way to find out who's who, where, and where we can get it.
That's fair. Yeah. I've been spoiled by Al Gore's technology.
Yeah.
What about you, ma'am? What do you think?
I think the only last scene that I would love to touch on is the iconic scene when she turns her brother into a dog and goes into the next room to a full, ready-to-go, beautiful bubble bath. No explanation.
Yeah, it's just there.
Throws him in, which reverses his spell. Again, no explanation. We don't know why water.
Dogs don't like baths.
Oh, that's it. And I love that the whole time he's clearly like hiding in the bath and she's also like breaking the whole scene. Yeah. Like she's totally laughing the whole time. And it's just like, and that's it. We never know why. It doesn't,
never
it adds
why.
Nothing other than joy to
no,
my soul.
The wish fulfillment of teenage girls to have their brother not be annoying. This was very in that
and
Clarissa.
And into a very cute dog.
Yeah, the Clarissa explains it all. Time frame of like, I hate my younger brother, sort of like teenage girldom. Like, that was very that.
I mean, I don't have any brothers, but I would love more dogs. So, like, I get it.
You wouldn't reverse the spell.
I never got into that trope of like trying to find my sister's diary. I had an older sister, like, perfect age difference. She's 2 years older than me. We're like, I should be fit. I never cared about her diary at all.
It
is weird. I think, like, also, too, like, I think if we like put the clock later on in life, Richie's not dating men. I mean, now dating men. You know what I mean?
Happily married, I believe.
You know what I mean? Like, he is dating men. That's my whole point.
If
you're interested in your older sister, it's probably because you want to be her in that way. You know what I mean?
Interested. I want to read your diary, girl.
I want to know what
you're doing.
Like, you're a messy queen in training.
I guess that's
what
why.
That is. And I say that with love, but like,
I ironed your homework.
It's very that. Morning paper. Yeah. Like, who needs iron homework too? Like, is that a thing?
And he's great. This kid has like 2 scenes with maybe 7 lines in the best performance in the whole film.
Stole the movie. And this movie stole our hearts. Let's go ahead and say thank you so much, Heather Grace, ma'am. Do you go by Heather or Grace or both?
By Grace. I just like to confuse people and make it as hard as possible for
I was
going to
say, like, I don't want to not call you by your full government name that you put on the top of this, but then I'm like, but I feel weird calling you Grace when this thing says Heather Grace. It's right there.
No, everybody.
I still see it to this day, and I've known Grace a long time. I still see it, and I'm like, who the hell is that? I thought we had Grace.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. I know. It's like, because it's like performance-wise, like acting-wise, I go by, that's like my SAG name. So it's always like a weird, like, well, here, that's me, but like,
go by Grace.
It's me. Yeah.
And you gave us Grace in this episode because this movie, by a lot of people, would be awful. But thanks to you, we enjoyed the heck out of it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really quickly, before we do a little bit of housekeeping, let folks know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me online everywhere at Get Your Gracing.
Get Your Gracing.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
Thank you.
Mark, we've come to a moment that I've kind of dreaded talking about, but I'm bittersweetly happy because I'm glad that we got to do Teen Witch. This is a movie that I've been trying to get us to for a long time. It has been on the list. And when we started this podcast, what was it, 4 years ago? In the dead of the pandemic.
Nothing to do.
With nothing to do. I was just like, if we can get this thing going on for 100 episodes, I'll feel good.
If we can get this thing back to being in a studio.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
That's
too.
Crazy.
Yeah, because we had started this and wanted to film it in the studio and then we had to do it digitally and that was not good for my brain. But after 4 years, and how many episodes, Brian, total?
I think we're like
160.
I was going to go 130. It's too low.
Damn.
Yeah, over almost, 4 years, almost to the day, we are calling it quits on Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. It is, it's been a fun ride, though.
It's been an amazing journey, and it's, you know, you look at the book, the rotten movies we love, and you look at all the movies that we've defended. Some movies have actually rebounded very nicely.
Yeah.
Like a Sister Act 2, where you go from where it was when we did the episode to where it is now, and it's like there was an impact. You put fresh eyes on a movie that was maligned for whatever reason by critics, and it's kind of fun to talk about that. And I feel like, no offense to you ladies, once we get into the Teen Witch, maybe it is time to just put the brakes on and say, we might have covered all the movies that people care about us covering.
I mean, really, and that's like, that's the main reason why we're doing it. When we set out to do this, we wanted to bring attention to movies that we felt were sort of fairly maligned. We wanted to make sure that at the Rotten Tomatoes, we get a lot of heat for maybe like throwing tomatoes at movies when really we celebrate the bad ones as much as we celebrate the quote unquote good ones as far as the score. And this has been a great expression of that, but it is time to pause so that we can do other things, so we can have other podcasts where I get to talk to Mark and folks like Grace on movies. And so this is our penultimate episode of Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong, and we will have an episode next week and a wrap up. And so we really encourage any of you guys that are still listening and that have liked the show and loved the show over the past few years to let us know what you think about the show, because we're going to have a send-off episode that will be our very last episode after, but our last movie cover episode will be next week, and then we'll do our wrap-up after that. And I just want to thank all of you guys for listening. It has been a great and incredible and hilariously fun ride. I can't wait to recap some of my favorite moments over this amount of time. Mark, anything to add?
And amazing guests.
Yeah, all the guests.
Like Grace, Heather Grace Hancock. it's been awesome to have just great companions, great producers behind the scenes with Lucy and Brian, and just like so many people kind of working to make sure that we're on time. Like we get our show out on time and we're in the booth and we're sounding good and all that good stuff. So email us rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com and let us know, what was your favorite episode? What movies did we not get around to get to?
Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't defend this, because there will be one last opportunity on our final episode to do it. But this was our penultimate movie, like Jacqueline said. Yeah. We have another one that I think could rival Teen Witch as our send-off for the next time you guys hear and see us.
Look, we got Mark to do Encino Man. We got the Goofy movie in here. This is one that I've been also saying for a long time, and that is The Last Dragon. Barry Gordy's magnum opus to kung fu blaxploitation. I cannot wait to talk about this movie. It is, look, if you watched that episode of Insecure and didn't know about this movie, now you know.
I recommend, if anybody hasn't seen Teen Witch or The Last Dragon, do what I did and double feature it,
because
your brain is going to be all sorts of crazy mush afterwards in the most delightful way possible.
In the most delightful way possible. Heather Grace, thank you so much. I'm just going to say Grace. Grace.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here.
I'm just going to make everybody call me Grace Heather Grace. like Burger Meister Meister Burger. That's what I'm going to do now. Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being one of our amazing guests and being a part of our send-offs.
It
was really great. And we will see you all next time on our final episodic covering a film episode of Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. Again, thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next time.